folks, it's Nicole Knutson here. As a heads up, this episode includes discussion of terminal illness and grief. Please take care of yourselves, and whenever you're ready, I hope you enjoy the episode. Lighthouse 1, 1930, and Lighthouse 2, 1957. Jasmine Rushbrook, Oil on Canvas. When Rushbrook created the first of these two paintings, she never intended for it to be part of a set. But after her completion of the second lighthouse, she officially numbered them and paired them together as companion pieces. The coupling of these two works, which render the same subject in drastically different tones, provides insight into key moments in her life and career. The first comes from a time of rising professional success and personal contentment. The second came after a diagnosis of terminal cancer and the complex swell of emotion inherent in receiving such news. But let us start at the beginning. In the first painting, the lighthouse stands on the edge of a desolate shore, all craggy rocks and crashing waves. The remnants of a sunset linger in the air as night reclaims the sky, and the light from that tower, positioned at what seems like the edge of the world, shines not out to sea, as one might expect, not fully. Instead, it falls upon a lone feminine figure dressed in red as she stands at the edge of the waves facing the lighthouse. According to personal correspondence between Rushbrook and Annabel Godfrey, this first painting was largely inspired by the early days of their courtship. Per a note from Rushbrook to Annabel, she said of this piece, "While my professional endeavors were finally reaping the kind of success I had dreamed of, I was adrift in my personal life. I hadn't even realized that I had been lost in the proverbial sea, so focused was I on my career. And then, there you were, a beacon calling me to safe harbor. One where the dreams and ambitions I had carried alone for so long could be nurtured and tended to by someone other than myself. It felt, for the first time in a very long while, like being called home." By contrast, the second painting's tone is both visually and emotionally darker. In this piece, the shadows of night dominate most of the canvas. A single brilliant beam from the top of this lighthouse extends out into the dark, revealing only the upper half of the tower and reaching only so far into the night. Caught in that light beam, silhouetted in a reddish glow, stands a feminine figure as she leans against the railing of the lighthouse's uppermost walkway. She looks toward the sea, at whatever that sliver of light reveals in the darkness. Of this painting, Rushbrook wrote to Annabel, "I did not intend for such a stark final product when I began this piece, even in light of the second and third opinions that you insisted I seek out. But one night during the early planning stages of this work, I dreamed of the scene I had been imagining, and as I dreamed of it, it shifted. Suddenly I was atop the lighthouse, staring out at that dark expanse, and seeing only a fraction of it with anything resembling clarity. In that moment, a thought occurred to me, one that I remembered upon waking and which I could not shake, that as I had once been drawn to such a beacon, so too must others. Not other people, of course, that goes without saying. Anyone who knows you, or dare I say even those who don't, know that it is nigh impossible to resist your charms. But in this dream, I felt that the light was not driving away the darkness, but calling to it, beckoning whatever might wait within it, letting it know, I am here. It was the strangest thing, but I realized my place in the light, your light, prevented me from seeing just what lurked in the shadows as they waited to rush in. For I felt their presence and impatience as something thrummed in the darkness. I am not naive, my darling. I know that there is something you have shielded me and Tish and the others from. Something in the shadows here. I only hope that, as I go to join them, which I pray won't be too soon, my love, you may finally relent and let me know something of this part of your life. For I know what it is to carry heavy things alone. I hope you will let me share the load for whatever time I have left. Attention, Godfrey guests. Attention. We have an update regarding the restrooms of the estate. Yes, it has been a while since the last update about them. Never fear. All restrooms on the premises remain gender neutral. And though there is still some fluctuation in how many stalls, urinals, and changing tables exist in every bathroom, there is always at least one of each in every restroom at any given moment. But that is not the update. The update is that there is a new multi-part installation available for viewing on the mirrors of every restroom. What our staff first assumed were words written in fogged-up sections of glass are actually non-removable messages. Frustratingly non-removable, as our beleaguered custodial staff tells it. These messages, all of them haikus, present words of affirmation to the reader. They can be experienced either on their own, or you can ask a staff member for a map labeled with the viewing order to read the full overall message. For each haiku also comes with a number. Please note that if you follow the messages and visit each restroom in order, leaving the final bathroom will deposit you in the Godfrey gift shop, which, as a reminder, once again accepts cards, cash, and mobile pay. We hope that you enjoy this exciting new addition to the Godfrey's collection. Entry from the Journal of Annabel Godfrey, 1959. Ink on paper. The following is a draft of a eulogy that Annabel wrote for Jasmine Rushbrook, though it is unclear whether any version of this speech was actually delivered at the funeral, given the private nature both of the event itself and the contents of this journal entry. It reads as follows. For such a long time, I thought that foreknowledge of a loved one's passing would be infinitely preferable to a sudden, unexpected loss. I maintain that it is preferable, but not infinitely so. The pain comes either way, there is no escaping it. Not if you've gone through life correctly, which to my mind means loving as fiercely as you can. But the pain will hit you differently when you can see it coming on the horizon. It won't hit you with any less force. Grief is never gentle. But you may be able to brace yourself firmly enough as to not be knocked over by it. Maybe, in certain moments, if you're lucky. I learned this years ago with my parents, and now, as if I had learned nothing at all, I face it again with you, my flower. Relearning how to be strong, a lesson I first learned from you. When we first met, I was convinced that I would never again see the world as vibrantly as I once had. That I would go through life with everything overshadowed by a gray pallor in all its dismal shades. Such was the terrible impact of unexpected loss. But then there you were. So passionate and so hungry for life and all its messiness. Loving you, realizing I could love again when I thought such a thing was nothing but a foolish dream, was the greatest gift you ever gave me. Color suddenly rushed back into my world with you in it. That and the realization that love, if it exists in any form, is meant to be shared and expressed as often as possible. We learned that together and with Letitia. I am grateful that she and I have each other, as we must move forward without you. As far as my regrets are concerned, they are small in number but large in consequence. When new love sprung up in my life, in my foolish eagerness to run toward it, I did not always handle your feelings with the care they needed. While this is not the only reason we fell in and out as we did, I know it's a significant one. And the blame for that lost time lies solely on my shoulders. But I have never regretted giving all my love to those who have found a place within my heart. That love shall always be yours, no matter how much time passes. And as you reside there, perhaps you will find some of the answers that I never felt safe to give you. answers of shadows and secrets. For they live within me too. I only hope that you will see them as I do, and not judge me too harshly for it.
Thank you for listening to the Godfrey Audio Guide. This episode was written, produced, and performed by Nicole Knutson, with sound design and editing by James Ferrero. It was produced on unceded Tongva and Chumash territory. Enjoying your trip to the estate? Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your podcast app of choice. And consider telling a friend about us, or two, or three, or everyone you know. For information on episode transcripts, ways to support the show, and where to follow us online, please visit our website, thegodfreyaudioguide.com. Until next time, friends, see you back at the museum.